Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
We bring in Brandon Vogel with us. And Vogues, good morning. How are we doing?
I'm doing pretty well. How are you guys?
Good. We have been Purdue bashing for a little bit.
It's really easy. Why not? Easy to do. It's just like, hey, you were number one and you lost to number 300. You suck. You know? No, we're talking about T.O. and Trev and Matt Rhule and their little sit down that they had that the Huskers put out. Few things struck me there. So it was also different where T.O. can't be too upset about letting Frost go, because by T.O.'s own metrics of why he let Callahan go, that he said out loud, so yeah, if you can get to this many wins, we can probably make it work. If you get this many, if you can't get to there, I don't think this is going to work. Well, Frost didn't get there like 4 years in a row. So, you know, I think he understood why he had to go. Any takeaways from that one, Brandon, other than sort of the, it seems like T.O. respects Matt Rhule's approach and he's going to kind of leave it at that.
Yeah, I actually haven't had a chance to watch the entire video yet, but what you just shared sends me back to the day that Callahan was fired. And I remember it vividly because that piece of it stuck out to me. You know, I think we found out, well, maybe it had come out shortly before that, but it really surprised me that Coach Osborne, AD Osborne at the time, had laid out such specific parameters. And, you know, it makes me wonder I was surprised again when we kind of had it with Frost, maybe wonder if Trev speaking to Osborne got a recommendation to go that way. And I mean, if you're a coach, like it makes sense, or really in any walk of life, just like knowing what you need to do and knowing what you need to hit is fair enough. And you either get there or you don't, and didn't get there. And now Osborne, Alberts, and Rhule are sitting down together and creating social media content.
Brandon, do you think that the Tom Osborne factor is needed in order to win over Husker Nation now in 2023? It's almost felt like something that's been a box you have to check as a Husker football coach. Yes, you need the blessing of Tom Osborne. He needs some sort of influence over the program. At least in my lifetime, it feels like that's been a requirement for Husker coach. And I want to know, is that a requirement? Is that necessary? Or is this icing on the cake now that we've reached 2023, the fact that Tom Osborne seems to have a good relationship with Matt Rhule?
Yeah, I think it's something that people still want to see. And you know, when you stop and think about it, like Coach Osborne's probably one of the most fair people you'll come across. Like, he's going to be in the corner of, you know, whoever Nebraska hires. So it's a little bit of show business, I think, each time, but I do think it's still important. And, you know, I don't know, this is just my opinion. I look at Rhule, and what we know of Coach Osborne, they do seem like people who would mesh, would find some common ground. So I'm guessing that's actually the case here, but I do think it still matters to Husker fans.
Brandon Vogel with us, managing editor at Hail Varsity Weekend, at Brandon L. Vogel on Twitter. So I think you're right on about the mesh part of T.O. and Rhule, and I think it's important for the perception and the PR side, for everybody to be holding hands. Okay, you mean the unity part's big. And I think it really shows some humility as well by Rhule to be so willing to, I don't want to say showcase, that sounds a little bit invasive.
He kisses the ring and he understands why he should.
Right, which is cool. I think he's doing it because he truly thinks Coach Osborne's an incredible coach. He's not doing it so he's got another year if he goes 3-9. I think the reason's genuine. Vogts, why do you think so many coaches were, I don't want to say grumbling, but there may have been an eye roll or two in the past, and there's several choices. Like, it's funny. You have Callahan and T.O., right? And part of that wasn't fair about Bill coming in, not knowing what Nebraska was.
Yeah. Crusty old, yeah.
You have Riley letting out that, well, Tom wants to come to practice. Well, that pissed off T.O. allegedly. That was Riley. You have Bo there dragging T.O. out to run out of the tunnel, and that was as a tribute. Thanks for what you've done. He grabs his arm. He's like, raise your hand, man, you know, against Minnesota. And then there's the Scott factor where just, you know, a year before Osborne's or Scott lands in Lincoln, I mean, T.O.'s down speaking in front of the team at Central Florida. So he always needs to be a part of this. I think there's a lot of Nebraska fans that feel that way. There's some Nebraska fans that are ready to, hey, thanks for everything, man, but stay over there. But good for Rule in his comfort level. It's not always been that way with coaches.
Yeah, it hasn't. And I mean, I think that's mostly a reflection of Nebraska's fate on the field. And, you know, Pelini kind of threw, I mean, Pelini had success. He had very consistent success. And that one maybe doesn't fit the narrative, I guess. But when you look at those other three, like, I think about Oklahoma, Bob Stoops. Like, Stoops and Switzer had a great relationship. Maybe that would have been the case no matter what happened, but it sure the heck helped make that just, okay, well, Switzer was great. He can just be over there, be our program legend. And Bob Stoops, meanwhile, is winning national titles at Oklahoma. Nebraska didn't have that. So you kind of, as you go through and you end up every 4 or 5 years having to fire another coach, the specter of Tom Osborne and what he built looms large because you're kind of watching it, or who knows, you're at least worrying that, well, is that eroding? Can it come back? So I think that contributes a little bit to just that tension. Because if you go out and, you know, do what Stoops did in year two and win one on your own, then all of a sudden, like, you can just be like, yeah, I love having Coach Switzer here. I bounce things off him all the time, and we have our own ideas, and look, they've worked.
Yeah, and it's funny you bring that up, Elijah. Like, it's got to be different from your perspective where you weren't alive when T.O. was doing his thing. It's still very fresh in other – you know, I know it was the mid-90s. It was a long time ago, but you can vividly remember the names, the faces, the feelings, all of it, right? So it's interesting, that perspective, and I would understand it. I think it's just more about, like, it helps you with the behind-the-scenes. It helps you with kind of the Husker Illuminati, like the same people that are donating to teammates are the same ones that are, you know, keeping the program alive. Right. So it's good to have that unity behind the scenes. You just don't, is it a requirement to win national titles or conference title? No, but it sure as hell doesn't hurt. Right. You just don't need that discord. You don't need certain money men in Trev's ear about not liking Rule for whatever reason because of information they're getting from T.O. It's an influence thing. He just has massive outsized influence, right or wrong. I think he actually does a pretty good job too of not wielding it to how he could. He realizes whatever the hell he says is not going to be taken with a grain of salt. It's going to be taken really seriously. So he tries to stay out of it a little bit, but he also knows he has to be present.
I mean, like, whenever you think about that, like, the influence, right, like, the influence of the state of Nebraska, T.O. was one of the reasons that it's taken so long to get gambling legalized in Nebraska, and then also the marijuana factor. Like, the dude's still got pull in Nebraska.
Yeah. Juice is what it's called, fellas. And
see, and this is what Rule, and really what Rule's trying to do is to help T.O. understand how much marijuana would help recruiting. And so it's all part of the plan. There's a strategy for all of
Mark you. Mark Kranach, fellas.
He's going against Prime, right? What do you think Prime's doing? Prime's like, it's legal. I'm Colorado. You're good.
What is, you know? What is
Matt's
Prime
over here?
Stance
he's like,
on...
I go to Sunday school. Like, it's hard.
What is Prime's stance on weed? I mean, Dion didn't ever seem to be like a drug guy to me.
That's a great question.
Dion was a chicks and gold guy. I mean, he was.
He's got sunglasses on inside a lot.
Well, I'm still 95% sure that if you're in a legalized state, the NCAA still tests you for marijuana, like while you're within the program. So
you're still, just because you can go buy it on the street corner in Boulder, or you can go down to Lodo and get a handful of purple haze, doesn't mean you can still do it and not get hammered for it. And miss a season. I'm oddly specific.
That was oddly specific. You go down to 8th and Cass and get a handful of purple haze, THC content 12.6%, just as an example. Wow. Yeah.
Not in this household. So.
Yeah, that's good. That's good. Well, you're a hardworking Nebraskan that doesn't ascribe to those values. You know?
Oh, it's just not legal, and I don't want to get tangled up. If it ever becomes legal, who's to say I may not split a brownie with my dear great grandmother because her knee hurts. All right, not to get political for a moment, but
Brandon, do we need THC legal in order for Nebraska to be back?
Wow,
I guess the ultimate question.
There it is.
It's really the question.
While we're at it, can we get a sports kiosk in one of our favorite bars so we can put an end game bet on whether or not this field goal goes wide left?
Guys, it's so much more fun being online on a Saturday morning. Look at what we can get into. It's great.
I do not think that's a prerequisite for Nebraska to be back, though. I don't think it is an impediment. Let's put it that way.
There you go. Like T.O. Look at that. T.O. and THC.
That's fun.
Title. We got a title for the day right there.
T.O. and THC. There you go.
That works.
Let's go ahead and associate him with that.
Vogues, let's get into a couple of thoughts here. I know Coach Satterfield talked this week, and he hit on some of the goals for the spring, one to take care of the football. The other part I want to get your take on is what he said, scheme-fitting personnel with his pro style, and more so not having to have personnel fit scheme. What is your philosophy? Here's my system, fit to it, or, all right, this is what we got, let's go with it. I'm curious, and I've seen it work both ways. I think he had a good mesh with what Sean Watson recruited in Bo's first year with Joe Gans, with what they ran offensively. It was more pro style, where you had double tight ends, you had Halo, you had a blossoming defense, and you had a really good offense in 08. So I thought that was a perfect mesh, but it's not always been the case with what's been left over and who's come in every 5 years.
Yeah, I think you've got to have your base principles, both offensively and defensively, of like, this is what we're going to do. Here's why I think it's the way to do it. And, you know, that's all like high level football stuff, but a lot of college football right now is finding players and knowing enough to just get them the ball. So you've got to have some guys that can just win. Trey Palmer was a guy who could just win last year for Nebraska. I think they've got some good options for that in the running back room. Now we saw, with Grant in particular, the guy was working really hard for his 3 to 4 yard runs. So he needs some help. But and this coaching staff, it's been, you know, kind of refreshing to hear them talk about this topic specifically. I mean, I think Rule said it a couple of weeks ago, like a lot of the spring is going to be like identifying like, OK, that's our guy and that's our guy. You know, not talking about that playing favorites. I'm just talking about playing your best players and getting them the football. So I think adapting to your personnel in that way is, you see it in a lot of places in college football today that are having success. And if Nebraska is able to join those ranks, that's one of those items that feels like a little bit of a shortcut to getting back on the right track. If they were ever to go really positive in turnovers one of these seasons, which I think you guys probably know, I think is a pretty random thing that you can't totally control. That's the ultimate shortcut to having a special season come out of nowhere. So we'll see where that goes. Though, if I'm remembering correctly, Satterfield's offenses were pretty high giveaway. Again, it's one of those things where this should be fairly random. The last 15, almost 20 years of Nebraska football, refute that a little bit, and where does South Carolina fit? Because their two seasons were pretty turnover prone. But I think the days of, you know, late 70s after Oklahoma and Texas, or early 70s, debut the wishbone, you know, it takes over college football. Alabama installs that in the summer and runs the wishbone like that following season. Like, we're not talking about that level of switching year to year. I just don't think that can happen anymore. But if Nebraska can identify its playmakers and consistently get them the football in places where it can have success, which all sounds like coach speak, but I really do think it is pretty key to having success early on.
Yeah, so it's not going to be a system thing. That makes it probably pretty difficult for you to go back and look and project forward, you know, because the variables are just so different. As you've looked at him, though, Do you see some sort of mode of consistency, or is it truly no, just kind of wherever he's been, it's morphed and molded just based on kind of the variables they're dealing with?
Yeah. I mean, I would have to go back and look, you know, his 10 years, they lined up with Rule somewhat, like a little bit sporadically. Like he wasn't the OC at Baylor, but he was on staff there for a year. Temple, he was OC, you know, to start out and then moved on. Like, put it this way, when Satterfield came out in that first press conference and said, "I believe in the huddle," and like banged the podium metaphorically for it in pro style. Like, I watched some South Carolina games last year. Like, that was not my, I mean, it's not that it wasn't my impression. I just had no real impression whatsoever. So for him to stand up that kind of vociferously for like, "Hey, we're going to huddle." And like his, you know, reasoning for that all seemed justified to me. It was interesting, but so much of college football is like, it's hard to point to a team. Like, you know, Iowa's an exception to a degree. Some of the air raid teams are, but like, it seems like 85% of college football runs just slight variations of kind of the same basic offense for the most part, at least to me, as someone who's not, you know, like the hardcore X's and O's guys. I follow those guys on Twitter because it's super interesting, because they can dig into it and be like, "Oh, this is genius for this reason." But for me, kind of with a 10,000 foot view, a lot of college football is copy and repeat. And that's fine if you've got the playmakers and you can get them the ball.
Inside zone, outside zone, zone read, empty. Yeah, I know what you're saying, man. It does look pretty homogenous when you look across it all. Are we at the point, too? I think we've talked about this for a while, and I'm going to equate it to baseball real quick. So, you know, baseball's in the major leagues, they're changing their rules so that you can't do the shift anymore. You know, the bases are closer together. All in all, it's going to favor not just sluggers, not just power hitters anymore. Like, so it'll be the rebirth of the Tony Gwynns and the Ichiros and the, you know, the Vince Colemans even, right? It's going to open up the game a little bit more to more types of players. In football, it feels like everything has gone spread. Everything's gone horizontal. Everything's gone space. Is the college football game sort of primed for having, I think Michigan's kind of done it. Alabama's kind of done it. Is it primed for being like, no. Now bring back physicality. Now do things that are more vertical, more up the gut, more power-based, because defenses aren't necessarily equipped to handle that anymore.
Yeah, I do think as college football has shifted drastically towards basically spread as the de facto offense, anything beyond that and kind of the big, you know, the most notable counterpoint to it is a kind of physical approach. Downhill running attack becomes a little bit of a value proposition. Now, I also think, and I think this is why we see teams like Iowa, Wisconsin, you know, Michigan's the best example of late, have some success is you've got to have a defense that is capable of limiting big plays. And a lot of teams, not a lot, but a good share of teams in the Big Ten really are excellent at that year after year after year. Iowa's probably the prime example there because, okay, if you're gonna use physicality as kind of your wild card of like, hey, we can be more physical than 90% of the teams we play, you still got to worry about, and this happens more in college football than it does in the NFL, you still got to worry about the big play piece of it because, you know what, even if you're playing Kent State last year, had an excellent, excellent wide receiver who's at Penn State now. A guy like that can just beat you. Nebraska. Mm-hmm. Nebraska did it against Iowa with Trey Palmer. And Nebraska was, you know, we knew where they were, a 3-win team going into that game. But you hit two of those plays in a game like that that's going to be low scoring, like it flips it. And Iowa was the favorite. Iowa was more physical, should have beaten Nebraska going into that game, but a couple of plays changed it. So you've got to really be able to control that piece of it, I think, to get the maximum value out of kind of a physical base or physical approach. But if you can do that, it gets pretty intriguing.
And Brendan, while we talk about
the sprint option pass, sorry, that's what you do. That's by the real quick, and I'll let you. Sorry, Eli.
You're all good, Mark.
But on that play in particular, I would love to go back and look. I think it was sprint option pass. You know the one where, I mean, Tommy ran it, Jamal Lord even ran it, quite a few people, and Crouch ran it, where looks like option, then you stop and pull up. Tight end 40 yards downfield, 6. Like, I wonder what the percentage of that play in particular, in terms of like how many times it was called versus how many times it went for 6. It has to be Nebraska's most successful all-time play. There's no right. So it's even little things like that. Even if you don't have a Trey Palmer, if you've established that run game well enough, you're going to be able to hit a couple of those to Tracy Wistrom or Matt Harrion or Martin Gilman or insert tight end here from wherever, right?
When we finish this segment, I have some Nebraska playbooks on my computer, which have a detailed play breakdown of how often they run it. Like, I'll look in there and see from like 94, 95 and see what the breakdown of that was. I'll shoot you guys a text.
I bet you it's a 40% success rate, at least.
I bet it's over 50.
Yeah.
The sprint option where Gerald Armstrong was wide open, 18 career catches, 10 career touchdowns. One of those you're talking about.
It just gets you off the couch. As soon as you see him pull up, you're like, uh-oh, here's 6. You know, you stand up. And sure enough, tight end's open by 10 yards. Touchdown.
What play action?
I mean, it's still phenomenal to like think to watch those and like look at the footwork involved in like even pulling that play off as the quarterback, but anyway, we'll stop talking about stuff Elijah didn't get to see because he had a question.
I've seen these on YouTube videos.
Google Johnny Mitchell, Keith and McCant, 1991. You'll get what we're saying.
See, I watched.
Short side option, 3rd and 8. Dear God, they're calling it again. Uh-oh, there's Johnny wide open. And it was great.
I watched some full game replays on YouTube back during COVID. So I have a general base of knowledge, though most of this conversation is going over my head. Where I was going to go with this before we went into the intricacies and the beauties of this sprint option pass was that the defensive... I don't
even know if that's the right term.
Neither do I, but... Okay. Well, we'll move on. We're talking about the Iowa defense with physicality, and you're talking about the big play percentage, and I want to get your take on what you're going to be looking for, not only through the spring, but this season with the Husker defense to gauge their success. You talked about turnovers earlier. You've talked about big play percentage. Is there that one big stat that you're looking at, aside from obviously scoring, to determine the success of this Husker defense next year?
Yeah, I think for Nebraska's defense of late, in the past 2 years, like its best foot forward was it did a pretty good job limiting big plays on a percentage basis, which is how I usually look at it. Its issue was the defensive success rates, like how often teams were able to stay on schedule was a little bit high. And I think that's what, you know, those 2021 defense, you know, allowed, I think like 22 points a game. Like if you have a slightly better success rate, you're holding teams under 20 and that's really good. So there's that piece, which there's that box, which they haven't really checked of late. There's the big play box, which they have kind of checked. Because it's a year one in a new scheme under a new coaching staff, I think I would look towards, if they can keep the big plays down again, their defense is going to give them a shot to win football games. If you get the efficiency piece of it, great. But that almost seems like, you know, calculus 202 instead of 101. Let's get the 101 first.
Vogues, what's happening with you and Hail Varsity this weekend?
I'm down in Atlanta in a hotel room, as you can maybe tell. I was sent here by Matt Rhule to track the movements of certain high-profile recruit in the state. No, that's not true.
Yeah. It might be. Matt is he's creative.
Women's NIT on Sunday, of course, ramping up with our planning session, really, for spring football. Be there bright and early on Monday. So, and keeping an eye on the Huskers at the NCAA championships in wrestling. So a lot happening. March ends up being pretty busy on the sports front.
Quickly, Brandon, do you think it's a good sign for Nebraska that the Riolas are going down visiting Georgia on the same weekend as the NCAA tournament? Because I don't know about you, I wouldn't be able to focus on a visit if March Madness was going on. And frankly, I wouldn't schedule a visit for March Madness weekend. So do you think that's a good sign for Nebraska?
I like it as a theory. I can't say for sure, but I do like the notion of Kirby Smart being like, all right, you want to go see the weight room? Like, no, I think I'm just going to watch these games. This is pretty nice here in the players' lounge.
No, sorry. Purdue's losing to a 16 seed now. I'll be down in an hour.
Coach Smart, I got to watch this upset. My bracket depends on it. I've got Purdue in the Final Four. We'll talk later.
No. Dylan Riley's a smart kid. He wouldn't put Purdue in the Final Four.
No kidding. Dylan, what's your bracket look like so I can copy and say I'm smart? There we go. Vogues, take care, bud. Appreciate you jumping on.
I got it. Cool. Hold on. Thanks, guys. Real quick. Vogues, before you go, man, do you need any Atlanta food recommendations? I know you're a food guy. Or do you have it all planned out already? Because my brother lives there, and I was just there recently, and that's so he sent a whole list of stuff.
Hit me with one here on air, and you can send me the rest.
Okay, well, I'm going to hit you with two. I'm going to hit you with two real quick. So Chattahoochee Food Works, have you been there?
Nope.
Okay, so it's kind of like food hall type place, you know, kind of in it's a repurposed warehouse, and it's got awesome coffee shop, so like kind of food hawker vendor type situation. Tons of good options there. That's one. And then this one, I don't know. I have to tell you about this. It's called Das Barbecue, like DAS.
Okay. I've heard of it, but I have not been.
I'm like, is this like German barbecue? What is going on here? You know,
I
don't
effects.
Even. Yeah, I don't know. And apparently it's not sort of like traditional barbecue where it's like, hey, here's our pulled pork. Here's our brisket. Here's our whatever. And here's the sauce that goes on it. Apparently it has a different twist, but my brother swears by it. So I don't know. Just Das right. Barbecue might be worth looking
Thank you.
Up.
I will check those out. Next time you're down here, let me know. I'm not far away.
Yeah, man, I will. Oh, and by the way, Chattahoochee Food Works, good for like kids too, because it's like there's a bunch of walkable areas and, you know.
Is there a ball pit?
There is not a ball pit, but they can deal with it. There's like, there's a candy shop. There's a pizza place. There's, a, you know, so it's good. It's good stuff. There's your Atlanta food recommendations. Brought to you by Currency. Go Currency. All right.
Thanks, guys.
All right. See you, folks. That's pretty good.